I want to begin part two by saying that the group that was brought together in 1982-83 represents a multidisciplinary team. Specialists from geology, imaging, photometrics, structural engineering, astronomy, and cultural anthropology. The purpose was to develop 7 frame mosaics of each site. Secondly, to apply processing enhancement techniques ranging from cubic convolution to the process of Di Pietro and Molinar, known as SPIT, that would take 1 pixel and resolve it into 3 and finally into 9 image cells. Next, to prepare stereo and isocontour maps of the landforms, the pyramids, the face, and other appropriate landforms in the vicinity. And finally, to prepare orthographically rectified mosaic images of the sites and to investigate potential celestial alignments. For the record, I will simply say that the majority of the scientists involved in the teleconference were convinced that we should go back. Over 60% believed that the landforms in Sidonia and Alesium were non-natural. However, to argue from that point that there was life on Mars would be absurd without bringing into our discussion the rest of the story. So with your permission, I would like to look at the next 2 exhibits. I would like to suggest that there are obviously are critics that would suggest that what we're about to see is a trick of lighting or an artifact in the film or a misreading of the information. The additional data tapes that were received at Goddard from JPL were processed with very, very sophisticated computers that took 3 individuals to operate. What we found in the new exhibits, they made quote, Di Pietro was 1, the contour of the eye cavity remained unchanged. 2, a second eye cavity on the other side of the face became more distinct. 3, the hairline on one side of the face continued to the opposite side. And 4, a chin area line began to take shape. We're talking about frames 35A73, 74, 09A62, 70A11, 70A12, and 70A14. We see now the face 1.5 kilometers long, 0.5 kilometer off the base in the region of Sidonia, approximately 1 kilometer across the brow, showing a distinct eyeball within the eye socket. We see the earlier cubic convolution process was unable to bring clarification of the inner structure of the eye. Enlargements and the use of the other photographs showed a bisymmetry of the eyes, the openness of the mouth, a unique chin area, and what the Soviets have told us by correspondence to be a hairline resembling the Sphinx-like face in Egypt. Now, it's of interest here that those of us who worked in Egypt know that the Arabic name for the Great Pyramid area of Giza, Cairo, is Al-Kahira, which means the auspicious one or Mars. Which is to say, is there some type of psychic artifact in the track record of the human race? Did perhaps extrasolar intelligence make some type of encounter with ancient astronomers thousands years ago? I know the idea is extremely remote, but still we must entertain all possibilities. Systems that will be able to penetrate the subsurface of Mars by several meters. We know the permafrost extends down some 3 to 6 kilometers near the polar areas. We also have found some very interesting details at the South Pole. Dr. Mike Malin, graduate of Caltech, who's now at UC Arizona, has staked his reputation on the possibility that some of the meteorite material in Antarctica may come from Mars. The Americans, Brazilians, and South Africans have also found beneath the area of the South Pole evidence of a previous geological period, fossilized evidence of jungle vegetation has been found, and Dr. Stevenson at IMPE in Brazil has gone on record, and he has suggested that possibly we will find a clue to the greenhouse effect and even terraforming on Mars from further work at the base of activity in Antarctica. We see here the reflections of oil rigs and platforms in the Persian Gulf at a height of 259 kilometers. And we see here the Salima sand sheets of Egypt that was penetrated by spaceborne radar in 1981. At that time, NASA scientists shocked the world by showing it was possible to penetrate dry sand to a depth of 6 meters. We see the diggings and confirmation of the data takes. The earlier Landsat photographs simply showed sand-filled fluvial areas. This one area of Wadi Kamal is of interest, for with the use of synthetic aperture radar, it was found beneath the sand sheet was a series of braided radar rivers, so-called RR, representing a paleo drainage system. Now, the reason I'm showing this to you is my work has been connected with remote sensing in Egypt and in Brazil. And in a return to Mars, it has been suggested that synthetic aperture radar could also be used to explain some of the unusual features of earlier drainage. We see here a paleo drainage system that is trans-African in scope. If we take a look at the map of Northern Africa and we put together the underground radar rivers that have been disclosed by remote sensing, we see they link up with Lake Chad, which in turn connects with this huge drainage system known as the Niger Delta, which is the largest in the world. Present drainage systems in West Africa could not account for the gargantuan size of the Niger. Some earlier event would have had to occur to produce this tremendous delta system. We have seen, thus, in recent times through Sir A and Sir B, a complete reconstruction of a continental drainage system. And I have suggested to Mike Carr, who is on the Economic Committee, which decided which goes aboard the 1992 Mars orbiter, there'll be in polar orbit, that a synthetic aperture radar system be included. And certainly on the suggested plane that may also be set up, and synthetic aperture radar system could be deployed. In short, we now have at our fingertips a remarkable sensing tool that is capable of going through soft soil, L-band, X-band, C-band at 4.25 gigahertz. It is possible to even penetrate damp soil. We now have the possibility to make very unique subsurface measurements. With permission of the Egyptian government, colleagues at JPL, Ron Blum and others, proceeded to make diggings in the so-called radar river locations. And they found that there were indeed water mollusk fossils, as well as earlier pictures made by the first evidences of intelligence, suggesting an expansion along these river systems. I would like to conclude part two by suggesting that we look very carefully at the advances now being made by airborne and spaceborne radar. Here, through what is called forward-look imagery, it is possible to target any object in San Francisco or the Bay Area, as we see here, down to a resolution of 3 meters. Here on a JPL 990 aircraft, we see a holographic-like effect that is created by the return echoes coming from the bay waters, giving not one San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, but three. The correlations are possible through a very elaborate Fourier system using bandpass filtering and variance computation, which allows for a wide range of image classification. In the dry areas of Africa or in the wet Africas of Brazil, we have found that the original scene can be taken, and through two-dimensional transformation, the cycles showing variance computation can give us specific topographic reading, which in turn can be classified to give us preliminary geological maps of great importance, because we can distinguish sandstone from oil shale rock, etc., etc. It is my feeling that in 1992 we will have to do a complete geological survey of Mars and map extensively not only the areas of unique and romantic interest, but also the areas around the north and south polar areas that are encumbered by the permafrost. The forward-look image radar system also carries with it advantages of environmental analysis and could also be used for terraforming applications. It also has an application for a wide range of detection. We see in the city of Brasilia, at 259 kilometers, objects such as military vehicles, a wide variety of structures. In essence, we have only begun to see the whole opening of geomorphology and geoarchaeology as a stepping stone. We see here also the Amazon basin and the understanding of the new dendritic patterns using L-band radar. We see the mountains going back some 70 million years in Peru. We see the mangrove forest and the rice fields, Guayaquil, Ecuador, from a distance of 22,000 miles above the Earth. And we realize that this technology is a user-friendly technology that can be applied to Mars. This by itself would be insufficient without a new tool known as electromagnetic measuring system that has been developed by my company, which is a passive solar collector. It is called a petrosound system, which relates frequency bands and signatures of the various lithologies according to radiation levels. The system can go down some 40,000 feet with great accuracy. That is to say, it will be able to cover the permafrost down to the depth of 6 kilometers. We were recently invited by the Chinese Academy of Science to the People's Republic of China in 1976. There was a series of massive earthquakes. Tunnel systems were blocked, and here, in a unique experiment, we were able to go beneath the ground and beneath the coal seams that were open, actually map out a void area, which was like a bottomless pit for the Chinese This reading was so accurate that the Chinese were able to fill it with rubble, water, and air, and completely rebuild the whole structure. Through the Ministry of Coal and Petroleum, TMAC thus has brought technology to China to see if we can take a look at some of the underground forms of geomorphology and geoarchaeology. The tomb areas known as the Wanli tomb of Hopa province represent only one structure that the Chinese have given us permission to use our equipment on. We hope in the coming year to examine the Great Pyramids of Sinkiang province. And on the basis of our published work, we are suggesting to our colleagues at NASA Ames and JPL that an electromagnetic sound penetration system be placed aboard the Mars program for 1992. Activated by robots, it would essentially give us readings that would be very exotic and comparable to what the Soviets are doing with their Phobos studies of 1988-89, where they'll be using lasers, free electron lasers, to break through the regolith of Phobos. At that point, they will be able to take readings of the vaporized material and disclose once and for all whether or not these unique markings are the result of normal asteroid occurrence or reflective of some other possibility. John Brandenburg, who is a missile expert and part of our research group, has looked at these very carefully. They are about 20 to 30 meters deep, that is to say, the grooves, and approximately 200 to 300 meters wide. He has gone on record, and he stated that if indeed Phobos was an artificial satellite, it could very well have been victimized by a type of charged particle beam that could have produced this type of event. Although this is considered pure hogwash by most scientists, the well-known scientist Dr. Josef Shishlovsky of the Soviet Academy of Science, who co-authored a book with Carl Sagan entitled Intelligent Life in the Universe, has also gone on record suggesting that he personally believes that Phobos may be a hollow satellite or an artificial system, that it could have been produced by some form of higher intelligence. Of course, we don't know. And it would be far from us to speculate beyond this point. We're simply saying there's enough up there to take a second look.